Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on the nature of consciousness and life continuum as revealed through near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. Some of the topics we include are what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy and more. We feature a stellar roster of special guests of both experiences and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about our organization, Toward the Light, on this radio program, please visit our websites, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. Well, this week I am very pleased to have a friend and colleague and someone who's had some amazing experiences and done some brilliant work over the years, which has culminated in the publication of her first and a really special book entitled The Sage Age, Blending Science with Intuitive Wisdom. Welcome to Toward the Light, Mayanna Stevenson. Hello, Mayanna. Welcome.
Hi, Juliet. Nice to be here.
It's wonderful to have you on the show, and certainly I've been looking forward to this for months and months and months. But what I'd like to do is, I wanted to acknowledge the fact that I've certainly shared with you in so much of the development of this, and when I first met you, of course, you were sharing with me about a spiritually transformative experience you had. I believe it was in New Mexico. And this has also prompted you to go through a powerful initiation to become a shaman or shaman ka, the feminine version of shaman. So tell us a bit, let's start off with your sharing with our listeners a bit about your spiritually transformative experience and some of the things that led to the writing of The Sage Age.
Well, the first one was 15 years ago, and I was in the mountains north of Taos, New Mexico, and I used to take sabbaticals every year, and this one was one that I felt was coming for a long time. I've been searching for quite a while to justify my spirituality, and what I had found in the churches was religious beliefs, because they really didn't match. And so I took some time out to go on my own and see for myself, and I call it a Moses journey, because I went in search of God. And I went on top of a mountain to see who God was for myself. And I had several experiences while I was on that mountain, because I was, of course, fasting and meditating the entire time that I was there. And after I came down from the mountain and went through New Mexico, I had three, well, you call them NDEs for near-death experiences, and I had three DNDs, which is darn near died experiences, and where I thought I was faced with life and death. Just at a moment's notice. And so I came back from that entire experience fearless, just absolutely fearless of anything, because I felt like I had looked right at death, I had looked right at God, I had looked right at myself, I'd looked into the abyss, and all of them had looked right back at me. And it took me a solid 10 years to sort out all of the experiences that I had there and make any sort of sense of it. And that led to what I call a soul memory experience that happened in 2002, where I was literally put in touch with my oversoul, so to speak, instead of just the personality that I inhabit here. It was my full soul experience.
Now, did that take place in your home in Nashville in 2002?
Yes.
Okay, the soul memory, and that's very well put, by the by.
And I pretty much saw it like a tree. I saw my soul like a tree, so that each limb of the tree was a certain characteristic of myself, say like a warrior or an artist or, you know, different aspects of people that they really pursue as a fundamental component of their character. And what I was able to see was and have awareness of was the trunk of the tree where all of them come together and mingle, so that I could literally jump from one to the other, and also have an awareness of the roots, which the tree can't see, but have an awareness of it, which I believe is my soul level of experience, and I can't have direct access to it, but I have awareness of it, and it's what feeds me and sustains the whole thing and where the tree comes from.
Now, is that what led to the writing of your novel, The Warrior?
Yes, it is unpublished at this time. It's called The Last Warrior.
The Last Warrior, does. That's right.
And I believe it's going to go straight to screenplay instead of being a novel. It was really kind of short for a novel. It's a novella length. And I believe it's going to be turned directly into screenplay because that's how it reads. It reads very fast, and it's allegorical of the transformation that I went through there because I was literally changing realms and doing something that I think a lot of people do in between lifetimes, I was allowed to do here. And for me, with this tree analogy, it's like jumping limbs over to a different characteristic of personality to bring certain things through.
Well, it was really an excellent story, and it certainly resonated with my own experience and research. And it also reminded me of some of the Seth material that Jane Roberts channeled.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was a book entitled Oversoul 7, if my memory serves me correctly. And it's really, I've got that whole story cover to cover, as you know, and you did a tremendous job on that, so I really would look forward to seeing that published or featured somehow. So that's excellent. Go ahead, Mayanna. This is really nice.
Oh, well, Oversoul 7, I took a great deal of comfort in reading that book after these experiences. Pardon me, I had heard about the book for years, but had never read it. But I had read several books that she had channeled of Seth. And so I took a great deal of comfort in reading Oversoul 7 because it helped me make my experiences make sense. And then counseling with you as well helped that a lot. And hearing about the near-death experiences when people come into contact with the trunk of their tree. And that can be very overwhelming to see their soul in a much bigger context than the little personality part of it that they dwell in, you know, at the moment. And it's sudden. And I had been prepared for the experience, so it wasn't quite as overwhelming, and I had some way to sit down and make some sense of it. But I can't imagine what someone who has put no thought into it must experience when they go through an NDE and can come into contact with something like that.
Especially people who've never, really been on the spiritual path before, and then suddenly their lives are literally flipped upside down and then back up again, and nothing is ever the same again after going through such an experience. And I love your analogy, Don Near Died, but also that could be technically, that's often referred to as a near-death-like experience.
Yes, very much.
In the OE.
You have all of the mortality issues come up, not necessarily fears, but thinking about, I may pass this moment.
Exactly, that's
and
what
so,
that is.
It really brings that up to live with that every day as a reality and to know that at any time, under any conditions, I'm good to go because
there you
I'm
go.
Not so attached to what's happening here anymore because I see it in a much bigger context, no more than I'm attached to staying in a movie theater and staying connected with that story. So there's a much broader context and a much bigger story to my soul's life than the part of it that I'm carrying out here at this through this personality.
And that's a very good reminder to all of us to remain in the moment, to be very, very present, because we never know from moment to moment what could transpire and completely alter everything forever.
It totally changes my perspective on what's important
Yes.
in my life. And having a bigger picture really forced me to constantly look at the bigger picture. And so if anything, if I find something particularly upsetting one day, I might have to back out and say, will I even remember this 5 years from now? Will I remember it 10 years from now? And is it really something that's important to growing my soul, to feathering my soul? And if it's not, you know, I need to drop it right there. So it gave me an entirely different perspective on circumstantial things that occur because they pass. And also on feelings. I do have feelings But I don't go by them. I don't live by them because they're transitory. And to live by a much broader perspective of what's going on and to be level in my mind, to be level in my thought, to be level in my emotions is a much more balanced way to live.
And when you had this experience in 2002, what happened after that? And I do remember spending time with you that you actually started having a series of these powerful events. But what happened after this one? And I know that you started getting into the initiation of the work of becoming a shaman.
Well, the soul memory experience that I had in 2002 was a culmination of a few years of coming out of the place that I had been, you know, changing, literally getting to change over to another limb. And it took a while to back out of where I was to make that leap over to the next one. So the soul memories in 2002 let me have the wherewithal to be able to see across that bridge, to see where I was going, to see a bigger context. And I had to write that story of where I was before I left. And where I was, I would call a warrior place. And so that's why the book is called The Last Warrior. And it was me leaving that type of existence for another. And so I sat down and just wrote the book. I mean, just wrote it. It took me maybe 3 weeks to write the entire novel. And it just poured totally out of me. And I knew that I had to tell that story before I left. Because once I was gone, I was gone. And then once I did that, I began exploring the soul memories, what they brought me, because it put me in touch with the entirety of myself, everything that I have ever learned anywhere, at any time, doing in any sort of realm. And it gave me access to that information. So it was really powerful having snippets of that information that, and experiences, memories, knowledge, skills, those sorts of things that I had not actually acquired in this lifetime.
Well, that was very clear, and I was just thinking about the fact that you had amazing detail of the warrior and the strategies, and I just thought, goodness me, how intricate and aware that you were, and I really had a sense, well, she definitely had a past life as a warrior because she remembered it all.
Well, and not only just one, but hundreds of thousands, maybe, who knows, because it's knowing everything about it. I mean, knowing everything about it from someone who was just subjected to a war-type condition of being terrified of the whole thing to someone who was actually engaged in it willingly and at the forefront of that. So the whole gamut of it. But also during that time, as you know, I'm a very creative person. I like all forms of media of art. And I was fortunate enough to meet sculptors, my sculptors, who I am as a sculptor. And I had been wood carving during that time, too. So I get to pull on those energies and visit with my soul in that way by engaging in those activities here. And so that was very fortunate. And I've had music with me my whole life. But I was able to experience that in a bigger context, as well as being a composer and seeing the creativity pour through and pour out of me in all sorts of outlets, not only through this personality, but through my soul in general, and connect with all of that. So I had those experiences, but I think the one that really, really, really turned me around and started the Shaman Ka training and initiation into that was my whole entire life. My little voices, you know, the guidance that I have for myself, tell me, don't interpret your dreams. Leave them alone. You can speak of them to other people, but don't let them interpret them either. And that was just taboo for me, and I couldn't understand why, but I honored it, and honored it for my entire life up until that point. And now all of a sudden, I was told that I could have my dreams, that I could interpret them, that I could talk about them with other people and that sort of thing. And what I found out as I did discuss it with people, not just in a casual sense, but discussed it with people like you that understand where this information comes from and knows the difference between dreams and journeying and visions and things like that. And when I began discussing these things, I was told, well, Mayanna, hun, you're not dreaming. You're journeying. These are real places. And I was shocked. I was just shocked. And I found out that, for sure, that is exactly what I was doing, was journeying. And I just didn't have control of it. And I came to understand later that if I had known that's what I was doing early on, many years ago, that I probably would have become fascinated with that and taken a tangent off in
yes.
my life instead of following the path I needed to follow. And so for me, I've come to understand that some of the things that I was able to do before or not able to do had a lot to do with me staying true to a path. And that now certain things are open to me that I certainly was not allowed to do before. And other things have become closed. Ways of life that were very useful to me then are no longer so. And so it's been like trading tools, you know, tools in a craft that I got very, very experienced with that were very helpful and helped me build my life. Well, those are no longer useful. It's almost like being a mountain climber where I have collected all of these tools and gear and things and become an expert climber. Well, now I'm going to go scuba diving, and all of those tools just sink me. And so I have to trade them in for the kind of gear that I'm going to that's going to be useful to me now in the journey that I have now. And I really think that that's where a lot of people may have issues because, you know, Juliet, we've discussed this quite a bit. People right now are taking bridges to their authentic self from the life that they have been living to the life that their soul calls them to through this paradigm shift. And, of course, you've always done what you came here to do. You know, you have never not done that.
I've had no choice.
Right. But, I mean, even from an early age, you have always done exactly what you came here to do. But for many people, me included, and I see many, many, many others right now, are transitioning, and they're catching the shift. And part of that is to literally leave the life that they have been leading in the way that they have been leading it and make an entire change. And a lot of people are not willing to trade in that gear. They're sentimentally attached to what works, or they're afraid that they have gotten so good at something that they won't be that good at the next thing. And, you know, they probably won't. It takes time. It takes energy. It takes effort. But it also takes willingness to do it. And the things that transferred for me were all the intangible qualities that made me an expert. Not just the skills, but the intangible qualities, the lack of fear, and the persistence, and the willingness to hang on, and the willingness to keep trying, and the willingness to try it all. And so those things went with me into a new journey. And I'm very happy here now. It took several years of changing things over and letting things go and taking people and things and situations out of my life to make a hole for all of the new things. And if I had not been fearless, I couldn't have done that because I did grieve some of it. But, you know, I just wouldn't trade the life I have now to have all those old things as a couple.
Well, it's very natural to grieve when we're having to let go of people, places, and things anyway, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. But also the fact that you allowed yourself to be led. And an interesting note here, too, is that you were so strongly in your background, academically based and, quote, quote, tangibly based, and then you allowed yourself, when the time was right, to be open to the intangible and to be led, as you pointed out, without fear and having radical trust and just taking that quantum leap into this new paradigm and the new chapter in your life. And it's certainly already proving to have been indeed the right choice, and you're more than landing on your feet. My goodness me, I'm seeing you soaring, my dear. And I'm very pleased to see this for you, and I commend you again for, you know, coming from such a strong academic background to fully turn around and embrace the intangible simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. Well, I began fully as an intuitive in my young life.
Yes.
And I was raised with that. My father had the mind of an engineer and the heart of an artist. And my mother was an intuitive, as were all the women in my family on both sides. as if my, even in through my extended family, the other people I knew. So growing up, I had no idea that that was in the least bit odd. I thought if you were a woman, you were an intuitive, because every woman in my family was. So I was probably a teenager before I realized that everybody else wasn't necessarily or didn't adhere to that. And in my family, it was very, very real. And when a woman spoke up and said that she had an intuition about something, everybody in the family listened. And we had adhered to it. It was just as real as someone saying something about the tangible world, you know, that they could see.
Yes, and there are a number of us who, you know, as I said, myself being a lifelong mystic, I had no idea when I was young that everybody else wasn't the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was a shock to find out when people look at me sideways and say, what the heck are you talking about? Are you a nutter? And
No. Yeah, and I was a teenager when that happened. And, you know, of course, that's the time when you're trying to fit in with your peers and be like everybody else and whatever. And I was finding out that I was anything but like everybody else.
Yeah.
But I had my music, too. My grandmother, my dad's father, I mean my father's mother, set me on fire with music immediately. I mean, just immediately. And I was a multi-instrumentalist by the time I was a teenager and a composer. And so I had that outlet for all my intuitive skills, for my meditation, for my connection, my direct connect to the spiritual realms and to myself, my inner self and my soul level being. So I always had that outlet all the way through. And then I suppose it was in the 80s that I turned technical. And that's when I really, really, really started pursuing academics, the rational sciences, technical things, engineering, that sort of thing. And I lived literally in country with that for about 15 years.
Now, what prompted that? What prompted that turnaround?
Well, at school, actually, I was in a liberal arts college. I was going to two colleges at the same time. I started the summer after I graduated high school. I was going to school year-round, and I was 6 hours away from being a senior. I had a double major as in music and also in business with a minor in acoustics. And, you know, I finally woke up and decided there wasn't a job that I wanted for what I could get with that degree. And there's not much you can do with a liberal arts degree. And I had been working as an apprentice in a local recording studio, and I loved sound engineering. I loved everything about it. So I looked at that and I said, you know, I can run the studio from my business degree. I can do arranging, composing. I can play a lot of different instruments. And now I can do the sound recording. And the only thing I lack is being able to repair the equipment when it breaks down and do the alignments on it. So I went to technical school in electronics just to learn how to repair audio equipment. I ended up getting a job in Dallas in electronics and looked at that first paycheck, and I said, woo, I like this. And so I just stayed right there, and I was very happy doing that for years. Wanted to go ahead and get my my engineering degree so that I could create musical electronic instruments. Of course, that was in the 80s when synthesizers had come out. And so that's where I was headed. And I never completed that route. I just turned another direction and stayed in it. And I am thrilled for having lived it, literally in country with that mindset for so long, because it gave me the balance to all my intuitive knowledges that I needed to be able to live a blended existence, to be able to write something like The Sage Age, because I understand the science. I understand the intuitive side of it, and I have lived in country with both. So at this point, I'm at home in my heart. I'm in the center. I'm not looking to go, you know, keep the pendulum swinging. I'm looking to go forward in a different direction and live a blended existence and walk the middle path with this. And do the Marco Polo thing, you know, just come out to people and say, hey, I've lived there. I've seen these countries. I know their languages. I know their customs. And to be able to translate that for people who have not done that, because that's really what the Sage Age is about. It's not only education, but translating the lingo that's used in both camps, because sometimes they're the same words.
Yes, and I've been reading that too, and these are such valid points you've been making as well. And funnily enough, myself, I've also had that balanced interest in both science and metaphysics. And as has been pointed out too, it's only been in recent years that there started to be a more enlightened science and a marriage of the intuitive arts and science. So I think that this is very, very timely, man, and that you've written this book. And again, I'm really pleased to have been with you, you know, during the birthing of this whole project. And I remember, was it in 2004 or 2005 now that you had your Shaman Ka ceremony that I attended? Because I think that was a real turning point for you.
Yeah, it most definitely was, and you were at that. And I had been given, you know, like I said, I was able to start churning and knowing what I was doing. about 2003 or so is when I started my journey. Of course, more soul memories came. But also what came during the journey or started coming were ceremonies. And I had one ceremony during the journey, and I went to one of my pagan friends who has been a chief high priestess in Wiccan for years, and I asked her about it, and she said, Mayanna, that's a ceremony. That's very, very, very specific. And then I had another one, probably a week after that. It was a very different ceremony by a very different tribe of people, but it was still a ceremony where I was being initiated, and I know that I had those conversations with you too, and you verified the same thing. You said, that is that you're being spiritually initiated in the spiritual realm first. And
yes.
So I had two of those. Then I was given by a very specific tribe that I was told that I had belonged to, given exact instructions for the ceremony that I was supposed to have here. And I went to my Wiccan priestess buddy, and I said, can you explain this to me? Because I had never been in a ceremony. I had no idea what all the elements were and what it meant. And she just dropped her mouth, and she said, Mayanna, this is all exactly correct for a ceremony for you to be initiated as a shaman. And I said, really? And she said, absolutely, down to the letter. And I said, okay. So so I called in the people that I was told to call. Of course, you were one of them, to be at the ceremony. And there were only five of us, I believe, at the ceremony. And then the people who were supportive of it could be here in spirit with us, but for the actual ceremony. And things started showing up on my doorstep. The things that I needed had to be brought. And people that I hadn't seen in 2 or 3 years just dropped by and said, I was at the river this weekend, and I found this rock. And it looks like something very specific, and said, it just had your name on it, and just came here and left it. And those sorts of things just kept happening. And all of the elements, the different elements that I had to have for the ceremony showed up on my doorstep in that week before the ceremony and brought by others. So
that's a powerful validation right there, for sure.
Right, nobody was told to bring anything specific.
Mm-hmm.
And every single thing I needed was here for the ceremony. So that was pretty interesting. And at that ceremony, one of the gifts that you gave was Reiki. And it was the first time that I had received Reiki. And, of course, I felt like I blew up to be about, 4 feet wide. It's the energy that came pluming off of me. I think everybody just had to step back, you know, because that worked. And so when you open your channel for that to flow through, it flows. And I was in receptive mode, and everybody in the place just had to, the circle had to get a little bigger to accommodate the energy that was happening in that. So it was a very special ceremony. And it was really so funny to me, because the week before the ceremony, when all these things were happening, I sat down and I said, you know, just last week, I didn't even know what a shaman was, and now I'm about to become one. And so it's been a real journey to find out what a shaman does. And my understanding of it, and I had to get very clear with it about myself, most of the shamans that are out there are also involved in healing, which is great. You know, they're more like medicine people. But the bare bones definition of a shaman is one who journeys into the other realms to gather information. And I stay right within those boundaries. I don't do healings of any kind. I don't do the earth energy work of any kind. I just gather information. And when I started doing the research for the Sage Age, that became absolutely invaluable because there's so much information that's out there, even history. You know, truth depends on no one, but the facts depend on who you read. And the facts are all over the place. If you dig far enough, you'll find something that completely contradicts the thing you just read. And so the journey time and being able to sort through that to get to the information that I needed to pull through for the book, well, that was absolutely critical, absolutely critical to the book.
One thing that I will say is that, you know, I venture to really point out here that the sharing of this information in itself is very healing. Because when people are receiving the information that you're sharing, they're going to experience a tremendous amount of healing. Just having access to a lot of this is going to bring about aha, you know. I would definitely venture to say that that is healing, even though you regard it as the sharing of information. Of course, there's a pretty broad definition of what healing constitutes these days, but I would definitely say that that is one of them. What you share in the Sage Age, and in fact, as I was reading Chapter 4, and you know, the body-mind antenna, and really appreciating this so much, of course, I was going through a lot of these ahas and realizing that this is the kind of stuff that I've been active in all of my life. Mm-hmm. And then reading about something and said, well, there's an example of Reiki right there, or there's an example of telepathy, which is so important for people to really get their arms around at this time. So you're really offering some great healing in the form of words and information.
Well, too, in clarity.
Oh, yes.
Healing for our clarity, because the reason I wrote the book was, as I didn't intend to publish it. When I started the research, it was for me, entirely for me.
And when did you start it, Mayanna?
Oh, I started, it was right after I finished The Last Warrior, and I wrote that in February of 2003. It was immediately after that. It was the very next thing I did. And I had heard about all of these things in quantum physics, you know, that frontier science was bringing to the forefront. And I heard a lot of things in the intuitive practitioner's language that they were using the same words and saying there were things happening in frontier science that I heard intuitive practitioners say, see, they're talking about what we've been talking about all this time. It's like, no, they're not. They're not at all. It's not justifying what you're doing at all. As a matter of fact, they're pretty clueless about what you're doing. And then on the other side of it, intuitives not understanding some of the scientific jargon and realizing that science was actually finding and proving some of the very things intuitives have been experiencing, except that there was a language barrier.
Sure.
And so, like the word dimension. For an intuitive practitioner, the word dimension means realms of existence. But to a rational scientist, it means planes of measure. And has nothing to do with other dimensions, I mean other realms. So, you know, just something as small as the word dimensions is so misunderstood between the two camps. So I started the research for myself to get to the bottom of these things, to find out what quantum physics was actually about, what physics was actually about, what we actually knew through science, and then to also look at what intuitive practitioners were actually doing. What was going on with that? What was the difference between therapeutic touch and Reiki and all these different modalities that were being used? Because I wasn't real clear about that. So that's where the research started. But my point of the book was to be able to see if the body was an antenna, a multifaceted antenna, to receive all sorts of information and transmit all sorts of information. And that is exactly what I was able to find. And the first four chapters of the book are devoted specifically to that. Not only the physical body, all the way down to the cellular level, up to the bones in the structure of the body as an antenna system, a physical antenna system, like a radio antenna or a TV antenna, exactly like that, but also through the chakras, through the subtle bodies, through the chi energy that runs through us, that sort of thing, for those types of frequencies. How are we receiving that? How are we translating that, the energy and the informed energy from the non-tangible realms into the tangible realms? And how does our thought and intent and our feelings affect that and how that translates back and forth? So that's what I was doing with the book. And, you know, about 3 years into it, I had enough information to really start connecting the dots between what seemed like, on the surface, far-flung disciplines. And I could actually start seeing that they weren't far-flung at all. They were actually opposite sides of the same coin. And so I was able to start putting two and two together and coming out with very unique force. And I just started getting my hair blown back every day. It was those aha moments of, oh, I get that, and being able to connect those dots. And PMH Atwater says that when you can see start connecting the dots, then you'll see the web. And that's
absolutely
true.
She's been such a wonderful friend, and bless her, very, very prolific in the, you know, her own ability to gather all this information, again, a lot of it from experience. Likewise, being a multiple NDE, she's done tremendous work also bridging the gap between experience and research.
Her unique perspective gives her such a holistic understanding and a clarity that I think a lot of physicists on the planet would probably envy if they would just read her.
Mm-hmm.
Because she has, especially in Future Memory, that is
Yes. My
all-time favorite book. I recommend it all over the place because, as it is with all of her work, it incorporates more information than the title suggests. And it's not just about her experiences, it's Future Memory. But she has the best take on quantum physics of any layperson I have ever read. She totally, totally gets it. Totally. Completely understands it. And I am so thrilled for the work that she's done and putting it out there, especially, and you know this too because you were subjected to it back when this was woo-woo and it wasn't very accepted to talk about near-death experiences, especially if you had something that wasn't directly related to that person's religion that you were telling it to.
Yes.
And if it didn't conform to their beliefs about that, they didn't want to hear it. And, you know, it takes a lot of courage for PMH and for you and for others to do what you're doing. And the fact that the both of you came up and did what you did and stood your ground with it and said what you had to say gave a lot of comfort to other people who were
Bless her. PMH just turned around the following year after her NDEs in 1978 and started immediately doing research and talking about it, writing about it. And she was dished out a lot of opposition and ridicule as a result, part of which is the fact is because she was a female, you know, really sort of going into territory that she was theoretically not supposed to traverse. On the other hand, I didn't have my coming out actually until the beginning of the new millennium in Nashville, of all places. So here was PMH at the... in the late 70s doing this. Well, she had encountered Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, so that really helped her straight away. That helped catapult her onto her path, whereas, you know, I didn't really come out until the beginning of this millennia, so there's a radical contrast there. But now it's like, okay, there's no turning back. We're out there, we're just, come what may, sharing this information, and people like you, you know, I'm sort of at one end of the spectrum and you're at the other and PMH in the middle, in that PMH and I are both experiencers, but somehow she still had PMH has had a better command of the scientific language.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got an excellent command of that language. I can understand it, but I can't speak it, if you get my drift. So much of this is still ineffable, trying to describe it. But then if you say something, I can say yes, coming from a place of experience and knowing.
Exactly. And from talking to you for years and listening to your shows as well, there's absolutely no doubt that you get it. No doubt whatsoever, whether you speak it or not, because you do come from an experiential knowledge. And one of the things that the Sage Age points out is for us to go forward, we must value all ways of knowing. And experiential knowing is for most people, ineffable. And PMH Atwater has done a fabulous job putting things into words.
I think so too.
And I thank her for that. Because there are several experiences that I've had that I took great comfort in. She just barely mentioned them in some of her books, but it was there. And that somebody else has experienced this and can say what it is with some authority. And not from a place of being overwhelmed by it, but from a place of understanding, which is where she is.
Yes.
So if you talk to a lot of newbie people who are having these experiences, they're totally overwhelmed.
Oh, yes.
And they don't have context for them. And the type of counseling that you do, and probably that PMH does as well, is help people through that to see it in a much larger context than their own belief system. Because, Juliet, honestly, that is what a paradigm shift is. It literally moves you from your belief system into a larger context. It forces you to reevaluate your entire belief system.
And we need to move from belief into knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting. Somebody had asked me a few days ago something to the effect of, do you believe in life after death? And I said, no, I don't believe in it. I know it.
Right. One of the things that I found by reading history, and history is so vital because without it, we have no perspective of what's going on with us now. History is as much about our future as it is our past. And one of the things that I read was The Timaeus by Plato. And it's a tough book. It's tough. If you read it, get commentary with it because it's a really, really difficult book otherwise. But one of the quotes that I found in there from Plato that I just dearly love is he says of what science is that we know that we know that we know. And of the tangible world, all we can say of it is, it seems so, because it's always changing.
Yes.
And when I read that, I went, what happened to that? Where did that go? When did that change? And being able to read the evolution of human thought by studying history and philosophy, that was a gift I gave to myself. But it's also in the Sage Age because it's vitally important. It's not possible to understand the significance of what's happening today without a context. And history is the only context because many of the things that we're exploring, even in frontier science, even with the Large Hadron Collider that's ramping up to speed and is going to recreate the first instant of the Big Bang, this
is
the root of ancient questions, questions that were asked in antiquity. It's the nature of change in motion. Where did things come from? We're still very much in the West on the path laid out by Pythagoras. And for all the innovations and the things that we think we have changed, we have not moved from that mindset yet. And the Eastern mindset is extraordinarily different from that. And that's being blended now, and we desperately need that balance. But especially in America, we tend to pick and choose little pieces of other cultures, belief systems, and religions, and that kind of thing, and incorporate them into a whole that had never existed before and make it our own. And, that comes without understanding. It comes without understanding how those pieces fit into the whole and without the tradition of them. And so that blending is wonderful, but by the same token, we're doing it without any bigger context to understand it, and we're not really getting the balance of it. We're just getting stew. We're just getting this pot of amalgamated stuff that really has no tradition or history or context.
Well, that's a good point, and I think now, and one thing I really want to stress the importance of, too, is that not only as people are doing reading and researching and talking to one another, what have you, we also need to go into the dream time and listen to our experiences that we're having on other planes of existence. Now, I think, actually, we have got a caller. Is somebody calling in? You're on the air.
Yes, hello?
Hello.
Hello. I'd like to have you connect me to my mother on the other side.
Well, we can do that, but we're actually not doing mediumistic work right now. We are doing an interview on the author of The Sage Age.
The author of what?
We are speaking with Mayanna Stevenson about her book, The Sage Age. So we're not actually giving readings about connecting with one's loved one.
Okay, what is the title of her book again? I didn't get it.
It is called The Sage Age, Blending Science with Intuitive Wisdom by Mayanna Stevenson.
The Sage, S-A-G-E?
Correct.
The Sage Age. And who's the author?
Mayanna Stevenson. So keep listening to the program and you can hear more about what we are sharing. Okay, well, thank you very much for the call, and we will talk to you again soon. Blessings to you. Okay, Mayanna, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I think she's called before. She always wants a reading to connect with her mum, and certainly that sort of thing is very much possible, but this wasn't the time for that. But it was interesting, following upon the heels of what I was just saying, is that we do need to listen to and acknowledge and honor the experiences that we do have in other dimensions via telepathy. So that was kind of an interesting sort of ditty
that
happened.
Well, one of the things that occurred during the writing processes, and writing for me, the Sage Age, the actual physical writing of it, gave me everything that I wanted from the book. And publishing it was almost an afterthought because, like I said, by the third year of research, I found it so immensely helpful to have all of this broad, vast information collected in one place where I could reference it that I thought other people would find it helpful too, and that's what initiated the idea to publish it. But the actual writing of it was a pretty tremendous process as well because I had a lot of guidance for it. And I don't have personal guides. What I have are guides that are attached to the work that I'm doing. Basically, whatever it is that I'm going to be involved in, there are experts around me. And I also have my soul memories from all of my experience, my entire soul's experience, to pull on whether I have actually experienced them here or not. And that was a very interesting episode in writing the book, was to have these other influences available, and other voices, literally, available to share in their expertise and to offer guidance to help sort through the material, and to be able to listen not only to my inner voices, but to be able to listen to human thought. Just human thought alone, because whatever we have thought, and Carl Jung speaks of this, that whatever it is that we have in our thought process is available to everybody.
Absolutely.
And it explains a whole lot to be able to understand that, how concepts jumped from continent to continent and peoples all over the earth came up with the same sorts of things, even though they weren't physically in contact with one another, especially in ancient civilizations. They all came up with the same basic ideas. And, you know, it doesn't matter about time, but they all found the same sorts of things. And if we anchor information into this place, it's available to everyone who wants that information.
Well, very, very good example of this, Mayanna, is, and you'll really like this. People, again, who are friends who've been on this show, PMA Chatwater, Dr. Peter Finnick, Dr. Pim Van Mummel, Dr. Claude Swanson, and myself, and this is just to name a few right here, and of course there's many, many more. We've all independently of one another have come up with the same analogy of consciousness and the brain being like a radio or television, which is the receiver, and consciousness being the broadcaster that comes from outside of the brain. And I was so excited when I heard Peter Finnick talking about this during his lecture, and he's written about it, and Dr. Pim Van Lommel was talking about the same thing. And then PMH mentioned it, and I said, oh, blimey, I've been saying the very same thing and using the exact same analogy. So there's a very good example of all of us tapping into this same illustration, as it were, mm-hmm. almost verbatim.
Mm-hmm. And the Sage Age does the same thing. And in yes. the first few chapters, it talks about the physical body, how it's an antenna, how it receives information.
Exactly.
And then also the subtle bodies and how they receive different sorts of informed energy. And things that are for the physical realm, the physical body understands and receives, but things that are of the intangible realm, the other bodies receive that information in front. And so we have multiple processing centers. So one of the things with science, I believe, that intuitive practitioners are trying to point out is the brain is not the only processing center that counts. It's one of them.
Exactly.
But it's certainly not the only one. And what a lot of the complementary alternative medicines show are the other energy centers. And now science finally, as far as the physical sciences, they finally have the technology to be able to measure some of these subtle energies. And not at the level that an intuitive practitioner can work with them, but to some degree to say, yes, there is something beyond the physical body that's happening here. And so that's very exciting. And I think of things like the acupuncture meridians, the map of that. And it's extraordinarily detailed. And it's at least, what, 3,000 years old, maybe 5,000 years old?
Yes, closer to 5,000.
5,000 years old. And so the idea of blending the rational sciences and intuitive arts is certainly not new. Because there it is, done at an extraordinary level of expertise. Because it takes an extraordinary level of expertise in the intuitive arts to be able to find those energies and map them and know what they go to, know what they do, and just run the trails through the energy body. It takes a high degree of expertise in science, in organizational skills, in rational thinking to be able to actually make the map of the body. And so we know that acupuncture works. We know that it's kept a lot of people on the face of the earth alive for a lot longer than what our modern pharmaceuticals and science have kept people alive. And the reason that we don't go just sticking needles in anywhere is because it's highly ineffective. And being able to use a science like making a map is critical to the effectiveness of that sort of thing. And all we're doing is looking to go back to that same level of blending our ways of knowing. We're not reinventing something. We're not trying to change the way things are. We're trying to blend our expertise again. Because the world used to be in a way that it believed in the intuitive arts. That was the way that we understood the world. And then the rational mind and its curiosities took over. And at this point in time, that's the way we see the world. And all we're trying to do is blend those things back together and not make it exclusive any longer. It's not that we never have relied exclusively on our intuition. We did. That's what kept the race alive.
And so it's like bringing the pendulum back to the center, balancing and integrating and refining all of this to something that's very pristine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The thing that I want to do most is open the dialogue in a way that we can understand one another, to get the intuitive arts practitioners speaking to the physicists, not just science. I think a lot of intuitive arts practitioners are also healers, and what they know of science has to do with doctors or medical or pharmaceuticals. And they're all against that. They're all, I don't want anything to do with it. I don't want to talk about that. I don't know what they're doing. They don't know how much they're destroying people instead of healing them. They're not interested in healing, you know, and the whole medical profession is being one big moneymaker. But that's not science as a whole. And I would invite intuitive arts practitioners to talk to physicists, not to medical professionals, but to physicists, quantum physicists.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the camp I've been in. I've really enjoyed speaking with these physicists because, indeed, they know how, you know, very much like yourself, to bridge that gap. And Claude Swanson is one of them, and Muriel Beauregard has been on my show.
Mm-hmm.
It's tremendous, and there's a lot more of this that is happening, which has got me very excited. It doesn't need to be a thing of opposition and pointing fingers anymore, but, hey, you've got something I can use, and you've got
Absolutely.
Something I can use as well.
And that's one of the things that I just adore about you, is that you're totally willing to listen to other ways of knowing and incorporate that and see the bigger picture and see how things fit together. And one of the, and I really believe that a lot of people would be surprised to know that the most resistance that I have received to the messages that are in the Sage Age and the information are from intuitives, not from scientists, not from physicists.
Interesting.
Because one of the reasons for that, this is my humble opinion, is that intuitives have really had to fight to be able to justify what they're saying into, like you were saying about PMH, and you to take the ridicule and to take the woo-woo-ness of it and that sort of thing. And they've really had to work hard to establish themselves. And some folks have lost their careers and lost their personal, you know, people just put them aside as some kind of flaky something or other, which is not in the least bit true. They were just very challenging to folks' belief systems. And what I'm finding is that a lot of intuitives, when I bring a more scientific understanding to things, they don't want to participate in it because it takes away their specialness. You know, there's a fear that they won't be special anymore, that they can do this and other people can't, like telepathy. Now, what if that becomes normal instead of a special gift?
That's what I would like it to, yes.
And once we get past the point of need of being ill and whatever we're using illness for in our spiritual evolution, we won't need healers anymore either.
Well, to me, this is really good news, and I find that we need to embrace this. This is just the way it is. It's very natural as breathing. I'm just going to endeavor to say that it's an ego thing that requires one to feel special. I think we're all special because we're all these beautiful balls of light.
Yes.
That have been brought here to fulfill a calling. Now, I've got to say, we're really about at the end of this transmission of Toward the Light, and I know we could go on nattering for hours because there's such a richness of content to share here, but why don't you tell our listeners what your website is on, if you've got anything special coming up you'd like to let them know about.
The website is www.sageage.net, and you can find information about the book, about me. You can even sign up for the newsletter and get a free ebook, which is How Thoughts Become Reality. There are a bunch of articles on the site that are taken from excerpts from the book. So basically, you can try before you buy the book. There's lots of free things there for you to read. And the book will be featured in Publishers Weekly, the September 22nd edition of Publishers Weekly.
Tomorrow.
So things are going very well for it.
Well, that's wonderful, Mayanna. It has been such a joy having you on Toward the Light. We've been speaking with Mayanna Stevenson, author of The Sage Age, Blending Science with Intuitive Wisdom, a wonderful must-have book, in my humble opinion. So I want to encourage you again to visit sageage.net for more information. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. Next week, we will be speaking with Kimberly Wincy about near-death experiences and being in communion with children who have transitioned to the other side. So it's going to be a very special and moving show next week. Please do join us. Love and blessings to all of you. Thank you for listening in, and we will speak to you next week on another transmission of Toward the Light.